When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Here we go, hour three of the nation. Mike McCarthy at the podium at the start.
He's got a long road of rehab in front of him, so he'll obviously be loved and supported every step of the way.
I don't know, on the game itself, any loss hits hard in the aftermath of a game, but just with where you were going into that game, the fact you were starting to play a little bit better, got some traction, seemed to play the game you wanted to give yourselves a chance, and then not win it, and then see what, knowing what, you know, Overshown went through. Was that one of the tougher losses in what's been a very tough season?
Oh, definitely. And I know as a football team, that was about as heavy as a locker room that we've had in my time here. So, you know, definitely the loss, you know, but the injury too. I mean, it was definitely heavy. But yeah, it's this game will humble you. You know, it was a football game. We were in position to win. I really liked the team's, you know, practice preparation going into it. You know, we felt like things were starting to go our way. You know, we had some tough breaks in the game that didn't go our way, but, you know, we still had a chance. And, you know, it was disappointing. Disappointing for us as a team, obviously disappointing for our fans. But, you know, I was very proud of the way the guys played and just the way they rally and keep competing. You know, a couple guys obviously went down during the game and communication was steady, consistent, and they never lost their edge.
Clarence Hill also down a couple of things. Getting back to Marvion, you talked about a long road back. Is it likely that he could miss 2025?
Oh, I think that's fair. I mean, because, you know, time of year, obviously we're in December. So, yes, I mean, you know, I just think like anything, you have the surgery and then the rehab is a long process. But, you know, I think that's very realistic.
Last night you said you had a chance to talk to Amani after the game. Did you talk to him at all?
I actually have not. I said I have not talked to him.
No, you hadn't talked to him last night. I know you had a chance to talk to him today.
I have not. Today was, you know, obviously it was very busy, like it always is after a Monday night game, in the training room, and then, you know, our game plan meeting started at 7. So I'll definitely see those guys tomorrow. I'll see the team tomorrow.
Mike, Todd Archer, the ESPN, Leifau, and what he was able to do coming in later. How has he developed as a rookie for you, and now need him to play a larger role?
Well, I mean, you could see, you know, right away just his passion and his ability. You know, he's a striker, plays with great intensity. Obviously, you know, did some good things on special teams. And young guy needs opportunities, continues to play well. He's done a really good job growing, you know, with the green dot responsibility. So, really liked the way, way he filled in once Demo went down. So, he's another very, very bright spot, you know, of this rookie class.
And the production in the run game here lately with Rico, has that come with his understanding of the scheme and what you guys want, or are you guys kind of figuring out what you guys do best as a run game?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think first you got to talk about Rico. I mean, he's running the football. I think the courses and, you know, his run style is, you know, we've always loved his run style, but I just think the coursework, we've gone to some more 3 and 4 man surface runs. I think some of the things, you know, we had a different plan you know, with Cincinnati, just because, you know, some of the, just because of their volume of defense, we got into a hash mark game. I got caught on the right hash a few times when I needed to run the ball. But the point I'm making, I thought we had a really good plan, and I think he definitely fits the way we're running the football, you know, particularly the last three games. And you got to give the guys up front. It starts up front. I mean, I Cooper Beebe goes out. You know, Brock moves over. TJ slides in. So I mean, their guys are, you know, they're starting to get a connection that, you know, that you need, you know, in the run blocking unit. I think our tight ends, you know, playing with more two tight ends has been beneficial. You know, now having Ferguson back, you know, so I think there's a number of variables, but it definitely starts with the runner, and most importantly, I think the guys up front are getting it done.
John Machado with The Athletic, being at 5-8 four games ago, when you address the team, what's the message to them?
Well, just the facts, you know. We're gonna need a lot of help, but it doesn't matter. We need to beat Carolina. So I mean, that's where. You know, you play Monday night, there's not a whole lot of time to really, spend on the game, regardless of the outcome. I mean, that's, you know, I learned it from Marty Schottenheimer. He always talked about the midnight rule. I mean, it's so you have to turn the page. If you were in here today, the weight room was busy. You know, the training room was busy. Coaches were in game plan meetings. So you got to just keep playing. And we're going to keep playing. We're going to keep fighting. We just got to, you know, keep getting guys healthy, keep them coordinated. The way we're operating is the way you're supposed to operate, and it's, you know, we're operating like winning teams do. We just got to get it done on the field.
And with that being the case, then would it be fair to say that you expect Cooper to be your starting quarterback for the rest of the season?
Well, just like anything, I mean, we're playing to win. Yeah, we're playing to beat Carolina. That's I'm not trying to be cliche here. You know, you have to keep it clean like that. So I understand the questions.
Cal.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. You talk about trying to get things coordinated. How difficult is it to keep everybody together considering what happened last night and what you're facing?
Yeah, no, excellent question. I think it's, you know, that's what the player day off in a sense is. I mean, it's everybody needs to reboot. We got a coaching staff that's going to need some sleep tonight. I mean, it's Monday Night Football is – it's for the fans and TV, so it's definitely not for the coaches. But I think, you know, also with the players, you know, it's so we'll go with what we call a late start Wednesday. They'll be in the weight room tomorrow, and we'll have a later start, gives the coaches some more time in the morning, gives them a little more personal time, and then we'll be smart with our training pattern going into Carolina. But yeah, you have to turn the page. Coming off these Monday night games.
What does it say about your group that you continue to shuffle on the whole line and? Seems like you're still getting some kind of success.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a, you know, your O-line, you know, that offensive line group is one of the key components of any football team. So those guys are very close, spend a lot of time together, do extra together. They have a hell of a Thursday night dinner. These guys are – it's a tight group. So and I think it shows in these times. Yeah.
Nick.
Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. With Rico, 18 or 19 touches yesterday, was that kind of the anticipation going in, or maybe more touches would have been allowed?
Well, I think you always want to get a guy a touch, especially more touches when you have, you know, that kind of production. You know, I think third down, and, you know, he got caught on the right hash. I mean, there's two calls I wish I had back to third down there in the red zone, and, you know, the second down call, you know, when I was stuck on the right hash there too. In a fourth quarter. So, I mean, you have calls like that. And, you know, and also he's rotating in. He had a couple long runs. You know, Zeke got a few carries. But, yeah, my goal is when you got a back, it's hot. You like to get him, you know, 22 to 25 carries. I mean, if you're talking about the perfect world. But, you know, I think you got to look at the other side of the ball too. You know, they wanted a time of possession and so forth. But based on the way we needed to play the game, our outlook of projecting, you know, how many points and, you know, the first fourth and two call was, you know, we called that on Tuesday in game plan meeting. So, I mean, you got to have an approach going into the game. So, you know, we wanted to make sure we gave our, you know, the passing game some opportunities, but we definitely went in, you know, with the run game as the lead.
And CD kind of came up holding that shoulder on one of the tackles. Is he looking good going into the short week or just kind of a day by day?
Good question. I do not have the total workup from today. From the training room.
Josh.
Mike, Josh Lomantino, Lone Star Live. First quarter scoring had been, an area of concern for you all season. What worked well on the opening drive, and Is there stuff you can kind of carry over and how you prepared for that scrimmage?
Well, I mean, I think we've done a really good job moving the ball, you know, early. But, you know, it was good to get a touchdown. You know, the turnover, you know, there on the second series was disappointing. But, yeah, I think, you know, to me, I've always felt your first drive is a reflection of the connection to prep going into the game. I mean, you should definitely have some movement in the first drive. You know, sometimes it, you know, if a mistake's made or you know, they throw a curveball at you that you don't hit. You know, I think you have that. But I'm a big believer from an offensive perspective, you should have production on the first drive, and it, you know, even if it's just switching the field position. So, but yeah, I thought that was real important for us to get that first drive in.
Ed.
Ed Werder, WFAA. I know after the game last night, you explained that you had a punt return on, not a punt block. When we talked to Jerry, he seemed to think there was a punt block had been called. And then there was a report today that Jerry asked for an explanation from John Fossil after the game about the whole situation. Could you just describe your part in observing that or being in part of it? Or?
Well, I think it's in... And just to be clear here, I think it's the definition of what a punt return is versus what a punt block is. You know, I think when you look at the situation, you know, 2 minutes left in the game, three timeouts, you have the best returner in football back there, you know, so you do, you know, and we did. We called, you know, for a punt return. But now I think you got to go deeper into the mechanics of a punt return. You know, you have punt returns that have 100% hold up, you know, and then you have punt returns that, you know, you also want to make sure you ensure the punt, because you don't want the punter to sit back there and have all day and, you know, punt it, hit the scoreboard, you know, put it out of bounds. So, you know, you got to put some pressure on them. So, so there is a component of a potential, you know, rush in some of the returns that are called. So, and that was the case with Nick, you know, because you know, Buddy, we looped him across, and is John in here today?
Yeah.
Yeah, John can take you through it, but that'll be a fun one for him to answer. But, you know, but in Nick, you know, just because of the reaction of the guard and tackle, so he, you know, he had the B gap and was able to, so it's more of an opportunity, but it's return with a potential rush, you know, by Nick, and that's what happened. So the hard part for, you know, came on in AO is just the fact that they were in a vice and it went out of bounds, you know, and then they heard the crowd and just reacted and wasn't really sure how the ball got there. So, and that's where the tough part was, you know. And you can see guys are trying to communicate it, but those guys, you know, he was just not fully aware of that it was a block. So, that's a hard play, you know. Obviously, it's a mistake, and you know, when I look at those things, and you know, just how do you, because it's, you know, something, so we practice it, it's something that's repped and so forth, but you know, the mechanics of being in a vice situation, being out of bounds, turning, and the ball's rolling towards you, you know, that's a different spot to be in.
But did you and you guys have a conversation with Jerry to explain all that to him?
Well, general manager, he asked good questions, yes, absolutely.
Stop.
Absolutely.
Sal, you said the Athletic. Mike, kind of going off of that, just, you know, with John Fossil, the special team mistakes in the last month, like how difficult have those conversations been with him?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, it's the evaluation of, you know, what went right and what went wrong. I mean, it's something we do every single, you know, post game. So, you know, every play is graded, evaluated, you know, and, you know, no different for myself, Mike Zimmer, and John. We have responsibilities as play callers, and, you know, and a big part of play caller, you know, definition of it is the responsibility you have on each and every play, you know, every assignment and so forth. There's an assessment of risk, you know, and it's risk assessment, and, you know, when it goes right and you push the envelope a little bit, then obviously you're rewarded, but, you know, sometimes when you push it, it doesn't go the way you want it. So, and that's the beauty of the game of football. I mean, it's very fair to be criticized by it, but, you know, we're playing to win. You know, we weren't playing to tie the game. You know, we're not playing to just try to sneak in there and hope they screw it up, you know, and that's the way we've always played here too. So I think it's part of who you are and how you want to play. And, but at the end of the day, play calling, when you're putting together a game plan, you know, every situation's laid out. There's not a play in the game that you have not put your team in during the training period. It's, you know, it just comes at different times, you know, so, and that's the beauty of the ebb and flow of a football game. So, you know, it's just, you know, it's just how far you're going to push your envelope sometimes.
And you talked about the fourth quarter. You had a play that you may have wanted back. Is that one of the ones after Rico had the 14-yard run and then three straight incompletions?
It was a second down call in that series. Yeah, we had the first down. We had the first down run was, you know, it was actually set up by, you know, CD on the jet sweep before. So, it was a great counter play, and Rico hit it, you know, almost had him one-on-one with the safety. You know, almost came out of there totally clean. So, and then, you know, we were on the right hash, and I was trying to get to the left hash for the I had a couple runs that I had sequenced, you know, because the way I do it is when the defense is up, I'm sequencing the next series. And so when I ran the keep to the left and we missed it, you know, I went to the next right hash call of preference and have a second and 10. You know, then now I'm in third and 10. So I wish I would have got the, you know, the keeps a good call. I mean, you know, and the keeps were good for us. You know, we had a lot of production on the keeps. But when you do the hash mark game plan heavy, it that's what happens to you sometimes.
Garrett
Podell, CBS Sports. Mike, what did you see from Trayvon Diggs, his first game back after missing?
Well, played a lot, obviously. Was at 71, you know, 71 play. He played the whole game. So it was great to have him back out there. But, you know, I think, you know, coming off of everything he's been through, you know, that was a lot of football for him.
Jonah
Joad, WFAA. A lot of teams are banged up right now, a lot of injuries, but just kind of on a personal level, do you feel like this team has just been snake bitten this year with the number of injuries and to who the injuries have occurred and the severity?
Yeah, it's, you know, injuries is the most unfortunate part of the game, and we all have them. I mean, every team, you don't go through this league any season without them. You know, some numbers are higher than others, and the timing of it, and, you know, who and the timing is usually part of that big challenge. So, but yes, this is exceptionally high, you know, and I think it's just like anything. You just got to make sure you continue to look at everything. You know, I'm talking to the trainers about it every day. You know, strength and conditioning, things you do differently maybe in the off season. I mean, this, you know, you're always trying to find a better way in your training regimen. You know, that's the way you have to do it here. But yeah, this is an unusually high year.
Mike
Leslie, WFA. Coach mentioned the locker room after the game was particularly down. Multiple guys, certainly Eric Kendricks, Micah Parsons. Well, there was a lot of emotion, visible emotion, maybe more so than we normally see about DeMarvion and his injury. I know it's obviously somewhat tethered to just the caliber of player that DeMarvion is and the season that he's had, but it seemed like there was a lot more to it than just that. Can you speak to just the young man that DeMarvion is and just the energy that he brought to this roster that maybe is reflected in some of the emotion you saw?
Yeah, definitely. No, I think it's very well said. I mean, when you first meet him, you know, he has that presence. He has a very bright light, and now he's established himself. And, you know, I remember when he got hurt in Seattle. I mean, we were talking about him in pregame. I said, man, this kid's getting ready to take off. And Dan and I were talking about, you know, how long you think we're going to get him in the starting lineup. I mean, we were that excited about him right away. And has the injury in Seattle, goes through the rehab, you know, every day, same guy every day. So, but, you know, he's very well liked, but very well respected. And has a great personality. And we all see it. You know, I hate to tell you, we see it probably a little sooner than you do. But, we can see this guy's really, you know, is something special. And so, you know, I think that's a big part of it, especially where we are as a team. You know, our urgency needed to be at its highest, and it was. And he was, you know, one of the guys leading the charge. So, I mean, I think it's a very natural reaction by his teammates. And, you know, and he's got a big personality, too. He's got a great personality, you know. So, you know, he's a young man that's, you know, carries some juice in the locker room for only being here a short time.
You know, it's a different injury, a potentially more severe injury, but the fact that he has at least gone through something similar before and was obviously able to bounce back and play the way that he did this year, is that – any solace that, hey, you know, 2026, he might be right back to doing what he was doing this year?
Well, I didn't speak to him specifically about the injury, but I know just speaking to the trainers, you know, he's been pretty, you know, hey, this you know, what, you know, how's this going to go? What do I need to do? You know, has been pretty matter of fact about the plan. I mean, it's not even been 24 hours yet, but I would expect him to go to attack it like he did last year.
All righty, thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
There it is, the Mike McCarthy press conference saying it is most likely that the 2025 NFL season will be played without DeMarvian Overshown. He's likely going to miss it. And said Jerry Jones spoke to him and John Fossil about what occurred on the punt block. He's the GM. He asked good questions. Said my Cowboys had punt return on, and an opening allowed Nick Vigil to go for the block, which he got. But didn't quite work out last night. Unbelievable. That was a tough one indeed. I think the toughest loss of the year, but it's weird because it comes after so many people have given up on the season, and many of you, in fact, rejoicing in the L, looking more at draft position. Okay, it's time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420. Zachary, where are you taking it?
Yeah, we had the Heisman finalists announced yesterday, but who are the top 10 Heisman snubs of all time?
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That next.
All right, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. This segment of the show brought to you by Soda, that state of the art, is brought to you by the Frankels. Life is unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Jump online to frankelfirm.com. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. Here's Zach with an H. Your Woolly Bully in your top 10.
All right, let's talk Heisman, shall we? We've got the Heisman finalists that were released last night. It's been given to the nation's most outstanding college football player since 1935. This year's, what'd you say?
Mike's off.
Mike's off. What'd you say?
Jay Berzwanger.
What'd you say?
Jay Berzwanger. He won the first Heisman.
Berzwanger?
You love making up names, Broadus.
There's no way Berzwanger's a real guy.
University of Chicago, 1935. He actually got drafted and didn't go play. How about that?
He said, I heard he was good at schlonging in the other team.
No, thank you, please.
I mean, he just got schlonged.
Yeah, schlonged.
No, thank you, please.
So we're going to have the winner announced Saturday in New York. Here are your finalists. Frisco Lone Stars, Ashton Gentry, Boise State running back, He's had one of the most productive seasons in history of the sport, 2,497 yards rushing, fourth highest single season total in the history of college football, 192 yards per game, lead the nation, 58 more than the next highest average. That's crazy. He's rushed for at least 125 yards in 13 straight games. Unbelievable for Ashton Gentry. Dylan Gabriel, quarterback out of Oregon. He transferred from Oklahoma, we know that. And he's had a hell of a season. Of course, undefeated.
And Central Florida, too,
Ducks,
right?
Yep.
And UCF even a couple first. Places. Yep.
Then you got Travis Hunter, who's the big favorite to get this award. He will go down as one of the greatest two-way players in the history of college football. His accomplishments.
Charles Woodson would like a
very
award.
Very much
sir.
Like Charles Woodson, who in 1997 became the first Heisman winner who primarily played defense, also played a little offense. And he I know did. You love yourself some Charles Woodson.
I do love me some Charles Woodson.
You do. And then Cam Ward, another Texas kid. Quarterback out of Miami, also portal guy, Washington State from Cam Ward. And he was named the AP Offensive Player of the Year, Newcomer of the Year in the ACC, leads the nation with the school record, 36 touchdowns, 4,100 passing yards, 4,300 total yards. Pretty damn good.
Who's the first Heisman Trophy winner to win it out of the portal? Have we had a portal winner yet?
Well, Hurts won.
I was going to say, Jalen Hurts.
We've had transfers, right?
How about the portal, yeah.
Joe Burrow was a transfer.
Kyler was a transfer.
How about our guy?
Baker was a transfer.
How about Daniels? Was Daniels a transfer or a portal?
Daniels was a transfer.
Yeah, that's portal.
He might have been a portal guy. He might have been the first portal guy.
Yeah, Daniels might have been the first portal player.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of transfers win. He might be the first portal guy.
Okay.
So I got the top 10 Heisman Trophy snubs, 10 that should have won the Heisman that didn't. Let's see if you agree with these. Do you have anyone that comes to mind that you're like, man, this guy was really deserving of the Heisman? I always do think Vince Young. He got revenge in the national championship game.
How about our guy for Nebraska defensive tackle, Ndamukong Suh? Is he on that list?
Is Suh on the list? We're going to find out.
You're talking about Vince Young, though, aren't you?
I mentioned Vince Young, yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought Vince.
Archie Manning?
Archie, maybe. Number 10, we got Eric Bieniemy, Colorado. Ty Detmer and BYU essentially invented their air raid offense long before it was popularized.
Texas A&M broke him in half his senior year in a game where he was after his Heisman win.
Well, the BYU signal caller won the award, even though he threw 9 picks in the final 2 games of the regular season.
There you go.
Meanwhile, you got Eric Bieniemy over there at Colorado. He's got 1,628 yards, 17 touchdowns on the ground. He was the most electrifying player in the country, and they won the national championship. But he did not win the Heisman Trophy. In fact, he was behind Detmer and Rocket Ismail.
Rocket Ismail had a return against Colorado. In that, I think it was the Orange Bowl game.
Is that the Natty that year?
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 is VY. Vince Young scores. And, of course, hindsight 2020. Obviously, if you had a voted post-Rose Bowl that year, you'd have given it to Vince Young. But it goes to Reggie Bush, who did have that Heisman taken
he was
away.
Electric, yeah.
He's since been given it back, rightly so. And Bush had that lateral in that play that really tilted the entire game. Number 8. Peyton Manning himself.
Ooh, Peyton.
Peyton Manning. And that's a hell of a story right there. Peyton Manning in 1997. I mean, this was a classic Heisman Trophy season. He was a Hall of Famer, obviously, we know. Spectacular in 97. Under 3,900 passing yards, 36 touchdowns, led the Vols to 11-2 record, but he lost out to Charles Woodson.
Yeah.
Hard to knock that. 7 is Champ Bailey at Georgia.
Oof.
Champ Bailey. Also. He had an amazing campaign in 98. College football's lockdown corner, also played a little wide receiver, returned punts and kicks. He got 47 passes, 744 yards, 5 touchdowns. I don't think a lot of people know that. I certainly didn't until I did some research on this. Also ran the ball 16 times for 84 yards, and he averaged over 21 yards a kickoff return. So Champ Bailey was pretty damn badass.
He was.
Number 6.
You know what his brother's name was?
Boss.
Good job Bailey. Over there.
Number 97, off-ball linebacker 97.
Yeah. You know where he played in the NFL?
Detroit.
Damn right, he was Detroit. A Lion.
Second-round pick?
I think he was.
Yeah.
6 is Adrian Peterson with the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yes, dude.
Now, Matt Leinart was deserving. He won the Heisman that year, but Adrian Peterson in 2004, just under 2,000 yards, 15 touchdowns. They go all the way to the national championship, did lose to Matt Leinart, who won it that year. 5 is Christian McCaffrey.
Dude, Peterson was a true freshman. That's unbelievable.
Christian McCaffrey at Stanford was unbelievable.
So Derrick Henry ended up getting the award that
year. Yeah, yeah.
But all-purpose yards, 3,864 for Christian McCaffrey, which is, I mean, you got receiving, rushing, kick and punt returns. The yardage broke the NCAA season's single-season record held by Barry Sanders. Number four, and this one's been texted in, Larry Fitzgerald at Pitt. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald has the single greatest maybe wide receiver season there in 2003. It was amazing, but also the best postseason run I've ever seen by a wide receiver. Taking the Arizona Cardinals to a Super Bowl, putting the team on his back, scored a touchdown in every single playoff game, and in that Super Bowl scored twice. I mean, he splitting the defense. Troy Polamalu's chasing him from behind. I thought he was about to win them a damn Super Bowl. Unfortunately, he had this Antonio Holmes catch and the Ben Roethlisberger throw, which some people, I know Kevin Gray, would say that Antonio Holmes' feet weren't ever down. That's a BS call.
Well, Fitzgerald was the cover athlete for NCAA.
He was.
So that's a nice consolation.
Kind of made up for it. Here you go, Brian, number three, Ndamukong Suh.
There you go.
Ndamukong Suh was incredible. In the Big 12 championship game, okay, this is just the Big 12 championship game, 12 tackles,
mm-hmm.
4.5 sacks.
Yeah.
In one game. And I'll never forget that. I mean, that was 1 second left. Colt McCoy's throwing the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
They just barely got on the field to kick it, kick the game winner. But Sue was amazing that year. Number two, O.J. Simpson at USC.
1968?
This was, yes, he should have won it, they said, probably in 67.
That was Gary Beeman UCLA.
He did win it in 68.
Yeah.
So they're saying 67 he should have won.
So he could have been back-to-back before Archie Griffin was in 74, 75.
But number one, biggest Heisman snub of all time, Marshall Faulk, San Diego State back in 1992. Falk rushed for 1,630 yards.
Oh, this is
yards.
One of these bad quarterbacks. This is a Geno TDs. Toretta, isn't it?
Dude, it's Geno Toretta. You nailed it. Yes. Yeah. Miami's Geno Toretta, considered one of the weakest Heisman winners of all time, could have gone to Marshall Faulk. It didn't. But, hey, I think Travis Hunter's probably going to win this award. Shout out to Ashton Gentry. I know he was on the edge with Michael Parsons earlier today, was, you know, talking about every defense had to game plan to beat me. Okay. Shador's pretty damn good. They got some other players there with Travis Hunter in Colorado. Everybody knew I was the dude, and I'm still going out there and putting these numbers up. But I think this will be Travis Hunter getting the award this year.
Everybody knows we got to get to the dude, Mark Schlereth, Tuesdays at 4:40. He joins us next here in the G-Back Nation. Thank you, Lucius. We're joined now by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And here he is, Mark. Good afternoon. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing wonderful. Thanks. You know, kind of used to the Cowboys' disappointment at this stage. But are you surprised Mike McCarthy didn't run the ball more last night?
Well, I mean, no, I'm not surprised by anything. I mean, they have not run the ball well, and they've run it better here recently. I think. You know, there's always that aspect of I'd like to run the ball. I'd like to run it efficiently. I'd like to keep Joe Burrow off the football field. I'd like to keep Ja'Marr Chase off the football field. I understand all that. Your best weapon, your best usage of that weapon is obviously CeeDee Lamb. And so, you know, there's a fine balance that you orchestrate. But there's a bottom line for me with the Dallas Cowboys and, you know, I said this on my morning show, the Breakfast Ball on FS1. Like, I would retain Mike McCarthy. I think Mark McCarthy is a good coach. I don't think Mike McCarthy is the issue. Like, the issue is talent. The issue is a lack of talent. And, you know, you can sit there and say, well, Mike McCarthy didn't do a good job. I'm sorry. Like, your owner, your GM didn't do a good job. Like, there is a lack of talent. And, listen, on the defensive side of the ball, Michael Parsons is an incredible player. But if I only have to deal with one guy as an offensive player, if I have to figure out how to scheme one guy out of a game plan, that's easy. Yeah, when you have multiple guys, that's when it becomes a problem. And so for me, I look at Dallas and I'm like, you know, you lost your left tackle. You lost your center. You lost different players. You lost your running back. You went to Tennessee. He's a damn good player. Like, you didn't really replace any of those guys. And, you know, you said, oh, we're all in and we got a bunch of young players that are going to play well. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I don't think anybody's seen it to this point. So I don't look at this like Mike McCarthy, you know, lost his fastball, or Mike McCarthy doesn't know what he's doing. I just don't agree with that.
So do you think with the ownership, could any coach really do a better job than McCarthy, or is with the ownership and the way that things get run, nobody's really going to be able to do better?
Well, I mean, I just think there's nobody that's going to go fix it, because nobody's ever going to be given the authority to fix it. I mean, there's one dude in charge. And so if we can talk about fixing it, hey man, Mike McCarthy won 12 games, 3 straight years. It's pretty damn good, right? They got trucked in the playoffs, but you know what happens to Dallas every time they play a team that can run it? They get trucked. Like every time. Now, yesterday is, you know, that's not the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals, like, I would question more their coaching than I would Dallas's coaching, because they throw their quarterback on the high dive 100% of the time and say, go save us. Go win us a ball game. I mean, that dude scrambled, like, that guy had never left the pocket, and he scrambled more than any quarterback I've ever watched last night. Like, that dude is Superman. And so, like, I look at that and go, you guys take no pressure off that guy, zero pressure off that guy. And that part drives me nuts. But, again, these are, you know, maybe my own idiosyncrasies, but I do know what wins in playoff time. You know, you can sit there, and I get a bunch of millennial people go, oh, the game's passed you by. Shut up, turd. You know, the game hasn't passed me by. Like, I spend more time in this game than just about anybody. The bottom line is, come January, come playoff time, come, you know, onion crunching time, you got to be able to control line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. If you can do that, you can win. Now, if you have a superstar quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, he can overcome a multitude of sins. But the bottom line is, you got to be able to control lines of scrimmage. And that's how good teams win championships.
And I think you make really good points about the talent of this team. The front office has to own that. But Rico had 18 carries for 131 yards. And before their punt on their second-to-last drive, they had 3 straight passes. And it was after a 14-yard run from Dowdle on the previous first down.
Yeah, well, those are things that you always wonder about, you know, play calling wise, and you think, well, listen, man, I'm a big believer in make the other team stop you, but when you're running efficiently, the theory behind that is, man, we ought to be able to flag a play action in there and pick up big yardage. And the last couple of weeks, man, he's run the ball exceptionally well. I'd be more upset about one of the first. Potential scoring drives when Rico goes out and they put in Ezekiel. I'm like, why is that guy going into anything?
Yeah, Jerry must have phoned down for that one, Wolchuk.
Yeah, I mean, put that guy in a guard, I had to go, okay, well, that makes sense, but not at running back.
What did you think when you saw that punt block, and then you have a basically a repeat of what we saw on Thanksgiving back in '93 with Leon Lett?
I just am like, you know, there are certain rules that, I don't know, that sometimes they don't make sense, but there are certain rules out there that you just know, like punt block, get away, get away, get away. Like everybody, like, you know, the whole Peter on a short punt.
Thank you.
You know, the hey man, if the guy kicks it and it's rolling out of bounds, establish yourself out of bounds first on a kickoff. And, you know, put a foot out of bounds and then grab the ball, because it's a dead ball out of bounds and you get the ball at the 40. Like, there's certain rules everybody knows, but, you know, it's always one of those things. Poor kid, man. He's, you know, he just came up from the practice squad, right, or IR or whatever he was on. And, like, all of a sudden that ball's rolling in front of you, and sometimes instinct just takes over. You know, you just brain lock and instinct takes over. And, you know, it just – I felt bad for Owuwariye. I mean, I felt bad for him. By the way, you think about this, okay? It was the punter is Rico, right? But it's spelt incredibly weird. It's Ryan Rico. Yeah. And then the guy who blocked it was Nick Vigil. The guy who touched it was Amane Owuwariye, excuse me.
We call
and the guy who recovered it, right? Owuwariye?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
close enough. And then the guy who recovered it was Mama and Jagmatal. Mama and Jagmatal.
Wow. Like, international like, game. Play
he also, he also missed the like, he missed the block. He missed the block that got Nick Vigil home, too.
Yeah, and I'm just like, that is the nightmare of all nightmare live reads when you're voicing over a highlight reel. Like that was like oh my. This morning I was like, we're just going to have to say mama saw it just was like this morning on TV. I was like, holy Moses, I need to call in somebody who's a professional because certainly I'm not.
Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Thank you, Mark. We got to run. We'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Here's a guy who's believing in Mike McCarthy. A lot of credible voices that have been in this game.
Yeah, I guess it's time for me to go to the lake because I'm not a...
the game's passed you by?
The game's passed me by. And I, you know what, personally, I do feel like that, and Stink's right. He does a lot of work. You know, he does a lot of prep, getting ready for his games. He does a lot of podcasts. He has to know what's going on. But I feel like, sure, if you want to bring Mike McCarthy back, but I'm with Chief on this. Don't need the same offensive scheme. Need a little bit different voice there. Maybe need a different line coach, receiver coach. I'm not trying to ruin lives and get rid of a bunch of people, but I'm just saying, you know, the bottom line is you got to find a way to win these games. And last night was a very, very winnable game. It could have got you to 6-7. You take your chances with Carolina, maybe get that thing to 7-7. And it's a bad football team. I get it. Cooper Rush is playing quarterback. But Mike McCarthy gave a game away last night. I mean, I think he gave a he the one thing he always talks about is challenging his team and running the football. And that last 5 minutes of that game, he could have sent a very powerful message to his football team that we're going to kill this thing and we're going to win this thing.
I like play action on first down after what they'd been doing, yeah. But if it doesn't work, you can't say, "Well, now we got to pass two more times."
Yeah.
You can get to third and one if you don't make it, right? You can make it a lot easier on yourself, especially the way Cooper Rush was throwing that football.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's going to be annoying is if you just use the injury excuse. Go back before your team was decimated by injuries.
You weren't very good then.
Your quarterback was there. The offense was bad. You had Micah Parsons. You had DeMarcus Lawrence. And the Saints completely destroyed you. And the Saints have turned out to not be a good football team.
Yeah.
So you can't just ignore and let things just kind of not be, tell the whole story when it comes to injuries and, oh, then they won a couple of games. You got to look at the entire body of work. And then you also got to look at the way they've lost in the playoffs. And there does seem to be attention to detail issues when it comes to being a head coach, not just play calling stuff.
All righty, Chief. In addition to the finest is up next. Where are we going?
Yes, no one embodied being a Cowboys fan more than this guy last night. And the Pets heads continue to fall off in filthy.